Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. LeBron James made a complete, utter fool of himself last night with his new HBO TV show, The Shop. A year ago, while guest hosting The Herd, I upset LeBron fans by analogizing the basketball star to Donald Trump. I explained how athletic privilege works just the same as wealth privilege. There's not a great deal of difference between LeBron James and Donald Trump when it comes to being an elite person and a privileged person. Last night, during the debut of The Shop, LeBron proved me prophetic with a profane, primitive, and privileged look inside his fantasy shop, which is best described as the Black Billionaire Barbershop. LeBron's shop is what Donald Trump must imagine a Black barbershop is like. Everyone is cursing and dropping the N-word, and there's a token white liberal soaking it all in, feeling like the coolest person in the room because Black people are comfortable being ignorant in front of him. Twitter absolutely loves seeing LeBron this ratchet and ghetto. But I can't just blame Twitter. Timothy Bella of the Washington Post wrote a fawning review of LeBron, Maverick Carter, John Stewart and company, channeling their inner Donald Trump. Here's what Twitter, the Washington Post, and even LeBron James all miss. The shop is fake news. My dad owned a barbershop in an all-Black community in Indianapolis. It was called the Knot Hole. When my dad went into the bar business, he took us to Leon's barbershop in the all-Black community right down the street from his bar. When I moved to Kansas City, I got my hair cut weekly at the Artisan Barbershop in an all-Black neighborhood. When I moved here to Los Angeles, I used to get my hair cut at an all-Black shop called Legends. In all my years of frequenting Black barbershops, I've never seen Black men sipping goblets of red wine. Lord is my witness, they were holding goblets filled with Cabernet. But that wasn't even the worst thing. I've never seen a token white dude, especially one who didn't grow up in the neighborhood, dominating and driving the conversation inside a Black barbershop. John Stewart from The Old Daily Show was the star of this show. Was Trevor Noah unavailable? Arsenio? What Black barbershop has no disagreement? LeBron retold his Brentwood spray paint story, and no one offered a hint of cynicism. Hey, man, how come you ain't moved? That's what would have happened in my barbershop. Look, I'm as verbally raw as they come, depending on the setting. But I've never experienced that level of profanity and ignorance inside a barbershop. There's always an old head who shuts it all down. 75 times someone cursed. 11 times someone dropped the N-word. Well, what barbershop is this? LeBron's shop was a collection of elite Black millionaires who are so far removed from reality that they think the Black barbershop is a minstrel show with a white choreographer. In the middle of this minstrel show, John Stewart had the audacity to compare LeBron James to Muhammad Ali. Are you kidding me? Ali stood on religious principle. LeBron James is standing on Twitter. I had very high aspirations for LeBron James, but he has been completely turned out by fame and pop culture. He's 34 years old and allegedly wants to be a social activist, an educator, and a role model. This is how you portray yourself? You start a TV show and you instantly become Black Trump? LeBron, you're lost, you're confused, you're hypocritical, you're fired. All right, joining me now in my own barbershop, Jason McIntyre from The Big Lead, TJ Houshmandzadeh, former NFL Pro Bowler, Dante Jones, former LeBron teammate, former NBA champion. Dante, I want to start with you. I've just shredded LeBron. I know you're friends with LeBron. I want to give you an opportunity to say whatever you want in response. I want this conversation to be good and healthy. What I saw last night blew my mind, and the reason why I'm hot about it is because my expectations for LeBron are just higher than this.
Okay, there's a lot of parts to dissect here, but one part I want to start you on is the barbershop is not the same universally. The Black man's barbershop is different, and we all go to a barbershop indicative of our social consciousness, of our relationships. of different things according to the person that we are. Mm-hmm. So I even checked in with my barbers this morning. I go to two barbershops on two different coasts, one in Inglewood, New Jersey, and one in Inglewood, California. Chuck Taylor in Inglewood, California, and Gentleman's Quarterly in Inglewood, New Jersey. And both were saying the same thing I was. They were refreshed by it because this is the barbershop today. The barbershop.
Goblets of wine.
The barbershop today.
Goblets of wine. Barbershop, with a white liberal barbershop in there today. The conversation.
Barbershop today is a group of gentlemen who is the black man's country club. You may have a drink. The conversation, the tone of a conversation, the words used are according to who's in the room. If a woman's in the room, a child's in the room.
There was a woman in the room and there was a white man in the room.
Let me finish. If a woman's in the room, oh, excuse me, ma'am. The woman might say, you know what? You got it. This is how I talk too. So you cater that conversation according to who's in the room. It was a bunch of men, and it was Candace Parker, who was refreshing because her perspective was dope as well. But they were having a genuine conversation. Cursing was there, but I'm desensitized to cursing because that's what goes on in a barbershop. I thought it was indicative of what the barbershops I go to. The ones I grew up in, they were like yours. But the ones that I choose to go to now are more of that social scene where men do have a drink at night. Men may drink wine. Men may drink beer. But
I've never Show me the black barbershop with the white liberal sitting there
the white
driving
liberal,
the conversation.
The white, we shouldn't be that sensitive to the white liberal in the room. I'm not saying it's a white liberal, but the white gentleman in the room, we shouldn't be that sensitive to it. It doesn't have to be all black men in that shop. Some people are not there to get a haircut. Some people are there to have the conversation. And the conversations they were having, they were refreshing because these are what we talk about. We talk about real estate. We talk about business. We talk about religion.
There was no disagreement in there, Dante.
But we only disagree on topics like the Bulls versus the Warriors or Kobe versus LeBron.
Why it wasn't authentic.
But those weren't the conversations that were highlighted. I think those are the conversations probably coming down the line. But we don't always argue in the barbershop. We agree because we're all going through the same things. We're all minorities. We're all going through this. We agree on topics of sports,
Dante,
but we universally agree. And
Dante.
I even checked in. I asked questions about this because I thought I was tripping.
I got it. But Dante, I'm just going to say this. I've been black 51 years.
I've been back 37 years.
I get it. We do disagree on things.
But all
particularly when we're talking amongst ourselves.
But
we may get on Twitter and there may be groupthink. We may get on TV and there may be groupthink. But amongst us, there is disagreement, and that was inauthentic. I want to move on. I'm going to circle back to you, someone else.
So for me, watching this, obviously, I haven't been in a barbershop, as you guys can tell. So my whole life, I've never been in a barbershop to get my hair cut.
Oh.
I just recently started taking my son. What I will say from watching this was the reason there was no disagreement, there was no conversation, there was no topic for them to disagree on.
Facts.
Number one. Number two, when you were going to the barbershop, it was a different day and age. So the conversations are going to be different because it's a different day and age. It's a social media era now. So the conversations are going to be more global. They're going to be different. Social injustice. Saying the N-word, that's how we talk. Like, honestly, that's how we talk. So I wasn't turned off by it because I talk the same way, whether it's right or wrong in other people's
TJ,
eyes.
I'm going to let you finish, but there's a lot of things that I do and you do that aren't meant for public consumption. A lot of things.
But if you want it to be a real show, then
I should whip out my laptop and hop on Pornhub. Because that's what men do as well.
I don't. I ain't never been on it.
Again, but men do. And a lot of people do. And so there's a lot of things that people do that we just don't do out in public. And again, if we're going to be... We got the basketball player who's been lighting up Trump. And, you know, he's not acting presidential, blah, blah. And then you come out and do this? I find it very hypocritical.
What was hypocritical? What did he do that really turned you off aside from the goblets of wine in the end? Like, I thought it was perfect.
On the
fine,
goblets,
personally.
Can I ask? What would have been a better drink of choice? Would it have been cool and real if they had broke out
40s? That's what they drink.
If they had been in 40s, would it have been better with water?
That would have been stereotypical.
Jason, I have been in black barbershops.
I have. My brother goes
to
a black barbershop.
Have you seen goblets of wine?
I've never had, but this is a TV show, Whitlock.
I'm telling you, I've
this
had
is a television
wine
show.
In a barbershop
this is an entertainment show. Now, let me add this. You keep looking for this debate to push back on LeBron. This was a conversation. He didn't want that. Now, Michael Bennett offered a little bit, right? He came back at Draymond Green a little bit on the N-word.
Oh, Draymond
Michael
Green
Bennett,
came back at him, but
Michael Bennett did not want to say the N-word, and there was a little pushback. But, again, I don't think LeBron was trying to make this a debate show. And as Dante said, hey, if it's a Kobe versus LeBron discussion, that's a barbershop debate. But this was just a freewheeling discussion, and I will say this.
Eventually, though, don't you think, as this goes on, there's going to be quite a few
disagreements.
There was a disagreement on the Cats. Somebody got corrected on the Cats on the Cats topic and the Hamilton topic of Broadway plays.
And let me just quickly get to John Stewart, because you keep ripping John Stewart being in there. And I spoke to someone who's going to be on the Barbershop show, LeBron show, this season. And he said, listen, everybody's welcome in the Barbershop. And when LeBron's putting together his crew, a bunch of guys who've never hosted a TV show before, Whitlock, you're telling me Jon Stewart, an all-time great TV host in the 2000s, isn't a good choice to go in there just to move the conversation? What's wrong with that?
No, because if you present it like we having this authentic black conversation and somehow there's the overseer there who's driving the entire conversation, no, I'm not with it.
So if you're asked to go, would you go?
Because one, there would be some disagreement because people wouldn't just let ignorant stuff fall out of their mouth or things that, look, they sat on there and acted like Muhammad Ali sat in prison and he did not. He did not. There was all kinds of, they sat in there and Candace Parker throws out, oh, LeBron, I'm glad that you're telling your daughter she can achieve anything because that's not what young girls are told. And I'm like, what world are you living in? We live in a society where black women are raising kids on their own, and it's been statistically proven they've done a far better job with their daughters than black boys. It's statistically, they out-achieve black boys by an amazing gap. And we're sitting on there acting like the real problem is with black girls and they're not being pushed. And she's just wrong.
But that's her perspective.
Diversity
of thought. But I think that was taken out of context. She's just saying what we're teaching our black daughters of what they can accomplish. That was refreshing to hear a man say it. To hear a man say that's how he's talking to his daughter. But I thought the conversations were authentic. And I think LeBron James was authentic in there because he's a role model. And as I'm raising boys right now, I want them to think about others. I want them to try and make the world a better place. I want them to
communicate.
I want them to be passionate. I want them to communicate in the best way, the best
like
way possible.
Adults.
I want them to have a moral compass, and I also want them to dominate in basketball. You know what I'm saying? That's lastly, but I want them to be all the things that LeBron James is because he's the gold standard for a role model right now.
And not one person, when this Snoop Dogg, who's a rapper, and that's what he is, a rapper, talented rapper, said on this, man, we're treated every place in the globe better than we are here in America. I nearly fell out. That is such a ridiculous
statement. That's his perspective.
That's his BS that needed some Twitter off because it's just not true.
But I have to take it in context because he's rocked stages on a world basis before.
When he goes out of the country and does a concert, it's 75, 80,000.
Do you know
he does a concert here, it's not 75 or 80,000. That's what he means by that.
That doesn't mean that everything is better, that we're treated better.
When
every place on the globe.
When he goes and performs, he feels like he's treated better out of the country than here.
I got it. But just remember, everybody in that room was pretty much a millionaire for the most part. All of these people, including Snoop Dogg, have access to get on a plane and go to one of these countries where we're getting treated better at than to deal with what we're dealing with over here. And so, look, any barbershop I've been in, there would be somebody that would throw some common sense at a lot of this ignorance that was just said. To sit there with a group of millionaires and pretend like, oh, my God, every place in America, every place in the globe is better than America for us, when they can all pick up and go there, wherever this better treatment
is. Better. They just say they get treated better.
Whitlock, in the modern barbershop, which has now gone, you know, mainstream, Nick Saban of Alabama has a barbershop show.
White people get their hair cut.
Exactly. Yeah. Would you not say the barbershop and what we saw last night could be the modern barbershop? Not the same one that your dad had 30 years ago?
It is the modern barbershop.
Of agreement.
I didn't stop getting my hair cut when I was a kid. Since I've gone this bald route the last couple of years, I cut my own hair. I've been going to barbershops for 49 years, not the last two. And all these people that are pretending like these are all private plane people that were on that show. These are all people that have barbers that are their own personal barbers and come to their homes. They ain't been in barbershops like I have been. They're pretending. And that's why the show rang inauthentic. That's why they're sitting around with wine glasses and everybody's cussing and Jon Stewart's driving the conversation and people are just saying ridiculous things because it's not even a real conversation. Because in a real conversation, things happen like what are happening right here. This conversation's far more authentic than anything they did. There's disagreement, there's pushback here, there's people with different perspectives. Last night, there was a bunch of people throwing out little silly PC thoughts intended for Twitter, and they needed a big can of Twitter off so somebody would deal with reality. You can't
listen
to sit here and pretend, and I've traveled a few places, to sit here and say, oh, so much better in all these other countries than here in America. It's a lie intended for Twitter approval to sit here.
But the only person that said that was Snoop because
and
he's
everybody agreed.
Because
and
he's an entertainer.
And that's the only person
not
that had
one
that
athlete said they get treated better out the country.
Snoop ain't going nowhere.
Not
Snoop
one
ain't left L.A.
But what I'm saying
it's
is
terrible when here, but he ain't left L.A.
When he does a show, it's 75, 80,000. That's what he's saying. They packed the arena for him.
Go pack up and live there.
Not one
athlete. Let's see.
Odell Beckham didn't say it. LeBron didn't say it. Michael Bennett, Drake. None of them said it's better out the country. That was Snoop's viewpoint from when he performed the show. Me personally, again, I've never been in a barbershop. I thought it was great. I really did. I thought it was a good
and
show.
And I'm giving you a person that's in the barbershop, takes his boys to the barbershop on a regular basis, goes to barbershops in basically every NBA
you
city.
You take your children, and there's that kind of profanity and that.
And what I'm saying, when the kids come in, the level of speech is different. When they leave and when it's just the guys, and you may go after seven for that. When you go, I may just stop in the barbershop just to see just what's going on, what the topics are. That's how we speak to each other. And I don't raise my children to be sensitive to every word. They know what words are wrong. They know what words are right. And when they hear it, it's not like an alarm. Oh, my God, that's a bad word. It may happen, but you just can't say it. And those are the things that go on in our barbershop right now. It is not that far off from the typical barbershop. You may have your choice of drink that you have. If they chose wine, they chose wine. But did you want a stereotypical drink of a 40 or a beer? Or like, what did you want?
There's not a lot of drinking going on at the barbershop. In
your barbershop, though.
In most barbershops. And so I'm going to just tell you what my number one thought. I promise to God, this is what happened. When I watched this show, the number one takeaway I had was like, oh, my God. Kobe Bryant has so much more class, character, so much more self-awareness than LeBron James. Kobe Bryant would never put himself out there like this. Now, he may go on that show and shock me and go in there and get right in there with him, but I was just blown. I was like, this is LeBron
James. They grew up completely different.
I get it.
They grew up completely different.
Lastly, what I found refreshing was you got a perspective from an athlete from the horse's mouth. You got a full conversation from it.
What was riveting?
Let me finish. However the athlete felt, you got the whole conversation. You didn't allow people to break it up and make it something that's not. You get to see an authentic piece of work from the athlete so that you can go back to it and see exactly how they feel. And I think that's what they were going for.
Football is about to make its long-anticipated return to living rooms all across America. That means bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs at DraftKings.com, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft a new team every week with no season-long commitment. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players and stay under the salary cap and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play, because nothing makes football Sundays more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line. To celebrate week one, DraftKings is hosting a free team pick'em promo. Download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use the code SFYS, all you have to do is pick at least half of the winning teams correctly, and you'll win a share of $1 million. That's code SFYS, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/pick'em for details. All right, welcome back. TJ Houshmandzadeh is back. We're joined now by a couple of Super Bowl champs, James Harrison and Mark Schlereth. Let's move to Odell Beckham Jr., who is one of the featured guests on last night's debut episode of LeBron James' talk show, The Shop. Odell just landed a record-setting new contract with the Giants, but still had some complaints about being one of the most recognizable athletes on the planet.
To me, I be feeling like, I tell people this all the time, I really feel like a zoo animal. Like, that's where life's gone for me. You know, we used to take your kids to the zoo and we used to be like, you know, I wanna see the lions, or let's go see the lions. And you go out there and the lions are laid out. You know what I mean? It's like, why aren't they doing lion stuff? You know what I mean? Like, I got people who call, Odell, dance. Like I'm a show monkey or something. Like, I'm a puppet, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, to me, that doesn't feel good, but it's like, damn, that's where life became. But can you ever really detach from that?
All right, The Shop is streaming now on HBO Go and HBO Now. Listen, people, when I go to someone's home for dinner, people get very upset if I don't get a second helping because I look like somebody that enjoys eating. I put myself out there like I enjoy eating. So people try to stuff food down my, I'm good. No, you gotta have a second helping, Because that's how I put myself out there. This man is dancing on the field, in the locker room, in my feelings, the Drake song. He popularized the dance, blah, blah. He's put himself out there in a way that that's how people respond to
Sure.
I can't blame people that want to see me eat. I put myself out there like I like to eat. What's he complaining about?
When you, listen, the way it is now, obviously with the social media, you're building a brand. You've built a brand. You've got 11.4 million Instagram followers. You've got the hair. You go out and do a, and God bless him because he's phenomenal. He goes out and does a whole show, pregame show in the end zone, catching it with one hand and doing all these things. I mean, he's putting on a show. He's an entertainer. So I always sit there and say, man, you can't complain when you've done all those things and the white hot spotlight shines down on you and shows some of the skeletons in your closet. Like, that's on you. Like, that, you've earned that. You've earned those stripes. That's part of it. I understand that you don't like it, but guess what? Like, there's different ways to go about it. Like, you could go in, take him and Julio Jones in a mall, put him in a hat and sunglasses. A lot of people would not recognize Julio Jones because he's lived this quiet life. He's been behind the scenes.
He ain't got blonde hair.
Everybody knows. Everybody knows that guy. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Well, I gotta kind of disagree. I think what he's saying is that it's times where he wants to have his own time. You know, he has the social media. He goes on Twitter. He goes on Snapchat. He goes on Instagram. And those are the times that he wants to share and show the fans what they want to see and entertain them and do whatever it is that he does. But it's times where he wants to just be Odell. Not Odell, the football player, the superstar for the Giants. I just want to go have dinner, eat, chill. I don't want 15, 20.
Get off Twitter.
Well, that's part of what he has to do. You don't work 24/7. He don't work 24/7.
He doesn't have to do it.
He likes to do it.
I get it, and this is what comes along with it.
But it's still times where you want to have time to yourself.
Jay, before TJ goes, Jay,
if I feed you one plate and I give you another plate, right, yeah, and I just continue to try and feed you, at some point you got to stop eating, right?
I would agree.
That's what he's saying. At some point, this has to stop. I want to have a little time to myself.
James, this is the reality. Now, this is a serious but funny statement. Mm-hmm. It's a serious, but there's a little humor into it. The way you carried yourself on the football field and the way you played on the football field, I'm being totally serious, it makes you a little bit intimidating. Even me dealing with you right now, there's only so far I'm gonna go because I've watched you present yourself on the football field and I really don't wanna deal with that James Harrison. So there's only so far I'm gonna go. You did that, not me. You made me react to you that way, so there's only so far I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go.
Okay. Now listen, I'm nowhere near the level that Odell is right now as far as the popularity, but I still get people that come up to me and they want autographs or they want pictures. Like I said, it's not to his level, but it's still points in times where I'm like, phew, I really don't want to do this. You know, I'm with my kids eating. He's like, Dad, someone's coming over. They look like they got a camera in their hand. I'm like, listen, okay, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna take care of this right now. And then you take that one picture or that one autograph, and now all of a sudden it's 10, 15, 20 more people. And you're trying to eat, and the first thing they go say is, I don't mean to bother you.
That's the life you chose.
Well, I chose to play football.
I still get it to this day. I still get it to this day. And for me, I don't mind it at all. I'll tell a quick story, right? So when I get drafted to the Bengals, we go to the Tri-County Mall. And a year before me, Peter Warwick was the fourth pick of the draft. Peter Warwick, the best college player I ever seen. We're in the Tri-County Mall. It's me, Peter Warwick, Chad Johnson, bunch of receivers. Pete, we cannot walk through the mall. Everybody's asking Dub for an autograph, for a picture. Mm-hmm. And me and Chad, like, we play? You know what I mean? Like, they didn't know us. They didn't care about us. And so from that point forward, I put it in my head that if I ever was in that situation, I don't mind taking a picture. I don't mind signing an autograph because that might be their only time seeing me. So I could be out with my family. I might not want to do it, but I'm going to do it because of they might not never see me again. And I remember being in that mall with Dub, and he was like, he didn't turn anybody down. I'm sure it got tiresome, but that's just the world we live in.
I understand that, but to his level, like for me, I'm
Odell
the same
is
way.
The only football player that is like, He's the first ever NFL player that I can recall that's like a global superstar because of social media. It's always gonna happen. I'm sure he gets tired of it.
At some point in time,
I'm sure he gets tired of it. But it's impossible.
I tell my kids, they're like, Dad, can you not? I said, listen. At some point in time, they're not gonna care who I am. I said, I'm gonna take it while it's coming. I said, if I really do get to a point where it's maybe three times, I was like, you know what? I'm here to watch my kids play ball. I said, I'll try and do something for you afterwards, but I'm here to do the same thing you're doing, watch your kids play. That's the only times I really have turned down people. Other than that, you know, it's cool. But for him, like you said, it's a global level. You know, at some point in time, you know, it's like, hey, I just want to go out and have a meal.
You look at it this way. Do you think, and we all played, would you prefer to be hounded or not recognized at all?
Tell you what, when I first started, honestly, on everything I love, I prefer not to be recognized.
But I'm going to be honest, though.
No, listen,
what he said to you,
I'm going to give you an example.
I played against you. What he said to you, everybody in the league think the same way. Like, bruh, don't push James Harrison. Hey, straight up.
There's plenty of people who have decided not to come up and ask you for your autograph or your picture with you.
No, because they're scared to be honest with you, I'm going to tell you something. Once I started doing the social media thing, I got more people coming up to me. But here's a story. I'm in a restaurant with my mom. This is like 2007. It's right after I just had my first year of starting. I made the Pro Bowl, all that stuff, right? So we're sitting in the restaurant, and I wasn't used to people staring at me, looking at me. And it's a guy, he's sitting over there, he's staring, he's looking at me. And I'm sitting there eating with my mom, I look at my mom, I say, this dude is staring at me. She's like, okay. I'm like, well, you know, I'm like, why is this mother staring at me? Like, do he have a problem? You got a problem
right.
with me? She's like, boy, stop, calm down. He don't recognize who you are. I had to realize that people were starting to recognize me, and I had to change the way I dealt with people, because any other time, it's like, why are you staring at me? You got a problem with me?
That's right. You know? We're good.
Right.
Yeah,
we're good.
All right, good.
All right, welcome back. James Harrison, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Mark Slareth are back. Let's move to the NFL. We're reportedly Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers have finally come to terms on a new deal, agreeing to a four-year, $134 million contract extension that will once again make Rodgers the highest-paid player in the NFL and reportedly includes more than $100 million in guarantees. I'm not that big on this contract because I think Aaron Rodgers needs to be a better supporting cast, and I wouldn't, if I were him, I'd go the Tom Brady route and not be the highest-paid player. I think they need a lot more help for him to be back in Super Bowl contention. So I'm not a big fan of this.
I wouldn't go that route because Tom Brady has his own facility set up inside Foxborough. I mean, he needs to get what he can, what he's valued at. Right now, I don't have a problem with what he did.
Yeah, listen, you got to make as much as you can. Marcellus, that dude's coming here. Did you give up money?
Did you give up money?
You lied.
I gave up $5.
Okay. Listen, man, you got to make what you can make. I tell you what, when Mike McCarthy morphs into Bill Belichick, then I'll give you back some money, okay? But until that happens, you better do a better job of scouting guys and developing guys and making sure that we have the requisite tool set here from a player standpoint to win. But Aaron Rodgers don't owe them nothing. He is the best in the business, and if he can make the money,
make the money.
I'm actually upset he didn't get more. He $31 million a year. He should be making 35, 36, 37 a year. And the next guy that comes should always be the highest paid player in the NFL. And in a couple years, that won't be the case, and you'll be talking about, oh, he's underpaid again. It's not his responsibility to make sure he has a great supporting cast. Exactly what Mark said. They have to put guys around him. You look at his receiving core, and none of those guys are in the upper echelon as players played at their position. They should have more than enough money to get guys around
them. It costs money to get people to come play in Green Bay. It's Green Bay.
Right, and so that's why he, in my opinion, took a pay cut. He took a pay cut relative to what he could command.
Okay, but that's an interesting point. But having said this, given the restraints of the salary cap, and given he's the Green Bay Packer quarterback and legend, he wants to win multiple Super Bowl titles. There's money to be made. Look, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's won a Super Bowl. But there's money to be made as the greatest quarterback potentially of all time. He's not going to get there. Tom Brady's got five Super Bowls. Aaron Rodgers, to me, with this contract, is setting himself up where he's only going to win one Super Bowl.
You go player for player, Green Bay in New England, player for player. It's not that much of a difference. You go player for player, each starter, all 22 starters.
So you think it's all Belichick versus McCarthy?
I actually think McCarthy is a good coach. I really do. But overall, obviously, Bill is the best coach in the NFL.
Yeah, I have to agree with him on that. I'm with Mark. It's time for the GM's, head coach, scouting department. Get it all together and make yourself right on every draft choice you get.
All right, to San Francisco, where Richard Sherman is looking to bounce back from a torn Achilles, but is facing some doubters after a video of him getting smoked in practice by receiver Marquise Goodwin went viral. Now Goodwin has gone out of his way to praise Sherman, saying, quote, "Even though you didn't ask me about it, I want to put it out there. The man is a gamer. Man, get off his back, because there's proof in the pudding. He's proved he's worthy of being a top player in this league. To get beat at practice, it don't mean nothing. It's iron sharpening iron." Marquise Goodwin's going out of his way to say nice things about Richard Sherman because obviously there's a confidence issue with Richard Sherman. It's one of them thou protest too much situations. You know, he's a gamer. When you start talking about he's a gamer, that means, well, he ain't doing a lot in practice, but we feel confident once the game shows up, he won't get toasted like this. I think Richard Sherman is shook.
You know what he did, though, right? He basically telling y'all, like, I'm not a bum. Like, I beat him. Y'all acting like he got beat by a bum. I can play here, too. That's all he's doing is saying, I can play. Y'all acting like I can't play. And so he's giving himself credit by bringing up Richard Sherman. It's practice. I done been jammed up against DBs that never played in the, it happens in practice. It just happens. It happens.
Yeah. I'm with TJ. It happens in practice. You know, it's not like you're going to win every match. That's why you practice, to get better.
Bill in the way when we get the best of you in practice?
He has it once, yes. He has.
Once, you said, or?
It doesn't happen that often, but he has. Yeah. I mean, it happens. You know what I'm saying? But that's part of practice. You got to go out there, compete, get better, iron sharpening iron, like
Richard,
you said.
Richard Sherman's issue is not a confidence issue. That guy has confidence. That guy can play. He's coming off an Achilles, and it's one injury that I've never had. But talking to guys who have had, it's one of the toughest injuries to come back from. It's going to take time. And the thing that you have to do when you are injured and when your skill set or your athletic skill set diminishes, which is going to happen to all of us as we age, you got to figure out how to be good without that skill set. And that's why you practice.
I believe Goodwin was like a world-class sprinter.
He is. I mean,
look, that was a goal route.
He's going to run by everybody.
After Achilles and a world-class sprinter, like, that's a goal route. Let's see.
I agree. But for him to come out and make these statements, to me, is raising a red flag in terms of if there was no confidence problem with Richard Sherman, no one would say anything. Look, and I get that he puts on the air of being a super confident person. I'm not sure if I buy it. The Seattle Seahawks basically just said, you know what? We don't want you no more. You're done. We're moving on. I don't care who you are. When your team you grew up on lets you go in that way, that shakes your confidence.
Not exactly. Like, you got to understand, Pete Carroll is a college coach. You can't play for Pete Carroll for a long time because you've heard the stories over and over again. He needs a new batch of guys so that, okay, this is a fresh story. He's got rid of a lot of guys. Richard Sherman was there too long. Let me get him out of here before he starts to corrupt the younger guys because he's talking too much. But when he was talking at a younger age, it wasn't a problem. It just became a problem as he got older.
All right, welcome back. James Harrison, TJ Husmanzada, and Mark Slareth are back. Let's move to Baltimore, where Robert Griffin III is still fighting to earn a roster spot with the Ravens, but has already earned a lot of praise for a new attitude during his NFL comeback, including from himself.
When I came into this locker room, these guys didn't expect me to come in and, you know, what I say, you know, be the first guy and last guy out, do all the things that you would say a rookie would do. They expected me to come here with that moniker of RG3 and just expect it to be laid at my feet. So I think I've earned their respect by how I've come out and worked every single day, whether I get all the reps or no reps, you know, whether I get no preparation for the game and then I have to play most of the game. I think that's part of why I've earned their respect, you know, aside from just being a cool guy.
All right, I think that was RG3 trying to express some humility, but I don't think he's mastered the art of humility because I think, one, he was a little bit bragging. Hey, I've played really well. and I'm not getting a lot of reps. I think RG3 is smartly trying to sell himself to another team. If Baltimore makes a mistake here and cuts him, RG3 is sending out a flare to perhaps the Dallas Cowboys that need a veteran quarterback. RG3 is from Texas, I believe, or certainly played at Baylor. I think I hear those comments as RG3 selling himself. Not the greatest amount of self-awareness, though, because he thinks it's the rookies that should be the first in and last out, when it's actually the veterans, the Peyton Mannings, the Tom Brady's, they're first in and last out. But he's trying to sell himself.
No, I don't disagree with that. I mean, we're all trying to sell ourselves to some degree. I mean, we all need a job. And he understands the writing on the wall. He understands that they moved up to get Lamar Jackson and that this might be it for him. But he played pretty well throughout the course of the preseason. I mean, there is a dearth of quarterbacks in this league, starting and backup quarterbacks. So there's going to be an opportunity for RG3 somewhere. That if you read the whole article, you read all the statements, the only thing in there that I didn't believe, that I didn't think was sincere, is when he said he didn't have any animosity toward the Washington Redskins.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to shove it up their cans, just like when I left Washington and went to Denver, I wanted to shove it up their can, too. I mean, that's the nature of a competitor. You want to make sure you prove them. I'm sure when James went to New England or Cincinnati, he got the chance to play the Steelers, you wanted to put it on them as well.
Definitely. You want to play your best game against whoever let you go. No matter what you say in the media, I'm the one to always say, yeah, I'm not, putting any more or any less into this game than, any other game. But it was a lie. Yeah, I'm trying to give you everything I got because you let me go. You told me I wasn't good enough. So I think the only thing, I had a problem with is he was laying it on, I think, a little thick, saying that, he's the first in, last out. That's like I said, that's what a veteran should do, and he leads by example so that the young guys see that and know that. And, saying that the guys respect you, I think the guys will say that, themselves if they, if you've earned their respect.
Yeah, I hope he's not the first in and last out, and Flacco's a starter, number one. I hope that's not the case. I hope that's reversed. But he's doing exactly what he should be doing, letting everybody know, I'm here. I'm trying to erase the narrative of I'm a bad teammate. I'm all about me. He's just putting that back out there so that he's actually played pretty well this preseason. Mm-hmm. If he does get released, he's going to get picked up really quick. He's played really, really well. And if you look at his statistics from his career, he's actually a pretty good quarterback. He hasn't won a lot of games, but his completion percentage has been consistently over 60 with the exception of 2016. He's played well.
I think the real knock on RG3 has been that he's a bit disingenuous. And James's point about laying it on a little thick, because even if it is true that he's first in, last out, when I hear him talk about it and brag about it, I wonder, like, oh, is that for show? Is he, like, showing up early and then taking a little nap somewhere? Is he staying late and playing video games in the locker room and just making sure I'm the last to leave? Or is he actually putting in the work? And, again, when you start bragging about all the work you're putting in, that's when I get a little skeptical. Anytime you catch me bragging, I'm usually lying.
But he is a backup quarterback. And so backup quarterbacks rarely get interviews. So he's just putting it out there. I've been here. I've been putting the work in because I might be getting released. So I'm letting everybody know I've put in a lot of work as a backup.
Speaking of self-awareness, it may be the most self-aware he's ever been. And there is that issue with RG3. There's been that issue. And I think he'd be the first to admit that, I didn't really realize what hard work was. And I think a lot of rookies come into this league, a lot of young players come into this league and think they're working hard. But then they start to realize, based upon what the other veterans are doing, like, wow, I need to pick up my stuff. I mean, I was in that same situation when I came in. I thought I worked hard in college. I came in and said, uh-oh, I got to pick it up from a study standpoint, from a knowledge standpoint. But where he is being genuine is he's understanding that I might get cut. Like, I'm falling into a numbers game right here because you did take this guy. So let me throw it out there and say, man, I put in the work, guys, and I played pretty well. And the odds are I'm probably going to get released.
James, I'm going to throw you a curveball. This is our last segment with you, and I want to ask you something. I want to relate this conversation because they drafted Lamar Jackson to put some pressure on Flacco. Big Ben was upset when a quarterback got drafted in Pittsburgh, and now we've heard all these stories about Big Ben's in the best shape of his career. He's prepared for his best season. He's changed his diet. He's working out.
was Ben a guy in his younger days that knew how to really prepare?
I won't say that he didn't know how to prepare. I'll say, you know, he may not have prepared like a Tom Brady did, you know, just from me seeing, you know, what he did. But, you know, he did the things necessary to come in. This year, you know, like you said, he's in better shape. You know, I believe he's got a trainer or a dietitian this year, and he's come in one of the best shapes, especially, you know, beginning the season that, you know, we've seen. So, you know, I think drafting that quarterback may have, you know, gave him a little push, a little nudge towards, you know, trying to do whatever everything that he needs to do to be in shape to play the game for what, like he said, you know, I see myself playing another 3 to 5 years where before, you know, he had situations where, you know, he was like, I'm going to take it year by year.
They drafted Mason Rudolph. You said, did he train like, did he prepare like Tom Brady? Did he prepare at your level, the kind of level, the way you prepared yourself?
He prepared, I think he prepared mentally more than I did. I was more of a physical preparation person. To be honest with you, my film study was exactly what we did at practice because I didn't want to get stuck into jumping onto tendencies. I don't like saying, okay, well, if I see this play right here, I'm going to jump it and be dead wrong, and now it done struck up the band and they done went for six.
All right, tune in next Tuesday as my new co-host, Marcellus Wiley, makes a special guest appearance on Speak for Yourself. We'll dive into his background and discover what makes him that dude. Wiley will join the show full-time on Monday, September 10th, when SFY moves to its new time, 3 p.m. Eastern. All right, welcome back. Dante Jones is here for Last Call. Let's move to the NBA, which has decided to remove restrictions on shoe colors, so players will be now allowed to wear any color shoe they want at any time. Oh, this is so exciting. This is so thrilling. The kids all get lollipops. This is awesome. This is why the NBA is so great. Is this a big deal? You excited about different shoe colors, Dante?
I'm excited as a shoe collector because now the consumer gets to see different types of shoes on display and the players can express themselves accordingly within reason, within certain boundaries with their
You're
shoe choice.
You're a shoe collector.
Yes, I have been.
Gym shoe collector.
Yes. My collection has changed according to how older I've gotten, but I enjoy basketball shoes and different variety of them, yes.
All right. I'm going to leave that alone. Elsewhere in the NBA, Manu Ginobili announced this week that he is retiring after 16 seasons with the Spurs. People have already speculated he could join the Big Three. Dante, you were in a fight in the Big Three championship game. Are you excited to see Manu Ginobili join the very violent Big Three?
I wasn't in a fight, and it was a small disagreement. That was my bad. But Manu would be a great addition to the Big Three. I think he's crafty. He's a threat in transition and in half court offense as well. So he would be awesome in that scene. Do I think he would do it? I don't know, but I think he would be good in it.
Is he a Hall of Famer before I get back to the Big Three? You think he's a Hall of Famer?
First Manu? Ballot.
Okay. And then what the hell was going on with you and Coutinho Mobley in the Big Three?
It wasn't me, but
it was Coutinho. He lost his mind.
I had the whole team that were on me at that point in time, but it was my fault. It was me getting caught in the competition of the things, and I should have acted accordingly. And I
are you and Coutinho good?
I mean, we're good now. It started with me and Corey, and I've apologized to Corey, and I've talked to Coutinho, Big Baby, and them. But it was my fault. I take responsibility.
Right. The next time we have you on this show, I'm gonna let you cuss and do all the things LeBron did. We'll have goblets of wine.
As long as no kids are watching, I'm fine.
Yeah, all right.